I'll go ahead and, while we're waiting for this to load, I just do the little disclosure. So I do wear two hats, so I have to do a disclosure. But OHSU manages me well. And I also apologize. Do I need to do, is it still loading? There it goes. I also want to apologize. I'm going to be fairly quick with this, and I hate doing that sort of thing in a presentation, but there's a lot of rich data, and I left a lot out, but we'll zip. And similar to the other presenters, I'm more than happy to share a business card and information for people who are interested. A healthy society is one in which not all of us are going to agree, and yet it is also one in which those who disagree can do so with honor and respect for other people's opinions and an appreciation of our shared humanity. In looking at the data that I gathered, I was looking at a variety of social justice kinds of concepts, and this one seemed to be a nice fit for me, Krieger and her team's work. Cultural misunderstanding can happen when nurses make assumptions based upon their own perceptions and fail to gather enough information. And to create global citizens, some key components need to happen. We need to be aware of personal beliefs and practices, practice equality and collaboration in a way that shows genuine concern for the welfare of others, and develop a sense of empathy or accurate understanding. To do some of this, of course, if we can sensitize nurses to their cultural perspectives, as well as their own personal attitudes towards culture. But in addition to that, raising that sense of awareness in general about any of their own values and assumptions within their general healthcare system, their practice, and the educational process in nursing. Some of the other recommendations for Krieger were to expose nurses to other cultures, even on an individual basis, as well as integrate any kind of citizenship and social justice curriculum within. One of the ways that I think that we can do this and that I've seen in my practice at OHSU is through motivational interviewing, which is a collaborative, goal-oriented method of communication, and it's designed to basically strengthen an individual's sense of motivation toward change, and my job then is to kind of pull that from that person so that this kind of conversation can happen with anyone in any setting. It's really collaborative, and the concept, again, that we're pulling that information to motivate and have the person sell it to themselves, basically. And that sense of compassion is something that's just strongly woven throughout. Putting those pieces together then, some of the main themes that I saw in the qualitative work was improving cultural understanding through checking assumptions and increasing that gathering information piece, as well as creating world citizenship through that quality, a collaboration, genuineness, as well as that awareness of beliefs and practices, and accurate understanding. And I really believe that's a real tie to social justice. You can judge through some of the statements that I collected. A small overview of MI is that it's linked to a couple of different therapeutic communication styles. The first one you'll recognize, the ORS acronym, open-ended questions, affirmations, very specific kinds of reflections. It takes a little practice to do these, and then summary skills. The second piece is very specific to MI, where you pull out that change talk and the components, and we'll use our little Kitty as our explanatory exemplar here. Kitty has very much so a goal, yes, to engage with that fish. We don't know what that engagement would look like just yet, but we can probably make that determination by checking in with the cat on its desire, probably pretty strong, its ability, also probably pretty strong, the reasons why it wants to engage with the fish, and most likely the importance factor is also pretty high on its list right now. The other component of MI is related to really assessing some of the commitment statements that come out, anything from a really strong I will to a less strong I might. But the other research has been demonstrating that the concept of activation, that they've made some start towards this, or that they're currently envisioning some taking steps forward. So I've quit in the past, I'm looking at starting a smoking cessation class again. All of these really relate very strongly to some forward movement. So, my qualitative data, 5 cohorts of RNs coming back for their baccalaureate. They are required health promotion class, 10 weeks. It was either offered online or in some face-to-face sessions with a very small online component. They were taught 6 hours of MI training through either a DVD or in a live format, and then required to do 1 client coach discussion with some taped interview, then had to do a reflective paper on how that worked. And then in week 10, we always have kind of a, so what'd you guys learn from the entire course, which also included behavioral theory, the change process, and some ethics and other elements. And so the data that I looked at for the qualitative piece was the MI paper and this week 10 AHA. You can see that basically the nurses are have been in practice much more than 2 years, most of them in acute care, wide diversity in the age ranges, and of course our typical white female. So tracking through those different themes, the first one's the cultural understanding. One of the sub-themes is checking assumptions. And what we found in looking at the data were that respect of the client was huge. And respect for their self-knowledge, their readiness, their confidence, their autonomy, their authority, and of them as individuals, as well as them as teachers. The next piece was related to kind of the nurse's sense of where they are as far as their own sense of not judging, being in the role more of a guide as opposed to the expert, offering a sense of grace, providing that they realized that when they had focused goals, that oftentimes increased misunderstanding, as well as they found that healthcare providers really increased the resistance in their own clients. So I love this particular quote, and I think it summarizes a lot of the elements. Trying to make a lifestyle change, employing it for some time, and then falling off that wagon is extremely difficult and is undoubtedly shameful for our patients. Readjusting their approach and trying again deserves applause and encouragement. My aha moment will make me a better cheerleader for these patients that come into our ERs or are admitted to the floors due to some problems. I will treat them compassionately, listen empathetically, and help them to reevaluate a plan that will work. And most importantly, I will applaud them for sharing their stories and having the drive to try again. Some of the other respect samples, self-knowledge. It is very difficult until it is experienced to believe that a client can come up with their own solutions, and yet this did indeed happen. Readiness. I think it is so easy to say, maybe you could or have you tried in an effort to relate, but I think that it usually leaves an individual feeling like a failure. For autonomy, you cannot force anyone to do anything they don't want, and the more you try, the more they will resist. The conversation should also go at the pace that the client is most comfortable. You always have them want them to think that they have control over their own actions, because they do. The guiding concept is that using this, I can direct the client in a specific direction, but they get to set the guidelines, the rules, and the plan for change. It is a lot easier than I had originally anticipated. The interviewer is basically able to sit back and relax and let the client do the work. Grace is again and again concepts of, you know what, there's no such thing as failure. I have to remember that, and I have to remind my patients of that. And the reality of creating resistance is I also found that a lot of the words we used did not work and often put patients change off. So under the gathering information component, two big themes came out. One was related to skilled communication, and one was related to the listening skills that they found that they needed more work on. So the overall importance of communication, they found that MI skills really do empower the client, that they have to practice those skills to be effective, that it's one step beyond therapeutic communication. It's really important to have those right words and inflections, that the ORS component is a really nice assessment tool. And that correctly, it's really important to both correctly target the behavior and the message. Related to the skills, most of them said they needed to become better listeners, the value of silence, hearing the story, hearing versus fixing, and active listening being quite different. So some quotes, using affirmations, open-ended questions, and reflection allowed the client to identify the problem, look at the past issues, what worked, what didn't. Using MI helped to identify the related health issues and benefits of weight loss. I watched the client go from contemplation stage to the preparation stage. The silence piece is another valuable experience I had was when I played both coach and client. I really learned that silence, although maybe uncomfortable, is a beautiful time for reflection. As the coach, I asked my client, where does this leave you? Question, and was met with a period of silence. Contrarily, in the next round, when I was in the role of client and was asked that question, it took genuine thought for me to formulate that answer. I realized that reflection is a process and it may take thought, time, and a period of invaluable silence. As I said, they all reflected on being a better listener and that it's an extremely difficult skill. Active listening is, I've always thought of myself as more of a listener than a talker, but realized there's a difference between just listening and active listening. Having to perform frequent reflections increased my active listening and made me realize that in the past I have not been the best active listener. For the story, I wanted to know if she had attempted to quit before, and if so, what it was that she felt contributed to the relapse. I found that she had attempted to quit 3 times and relapsed due to job loss, death of a close friend, and then the passing of her grandmother. Some significant events. The becoming a better citizen piece, the first major theme was that awareness of beliefs and practices, and they reflected an awful lot on how would MI fit within their practice. Obviously, a lot of the acute care nurses said, you know, there's no fit, I don't have enough time. And so there was some discussion on that. A lot of them spoke to the need for a little more practice to feel confident in using their skills, as well as they found a lot of benefits to MI, including patient satisfaction, RN satisfaction, and supervisory satisfaction as a nice tool. The fit, though, I found this one real interesting. She said, I've been modifying my care in many ways that incorporate use of MI techniques into every bedside encounter. Results have already proved positive. Careful questions at the correct time have left my patients with food for thought, so to say. And the next time I come into the room, I find a lot of them tend to pick up where we left off without me being the one to open the conversation. The second piece under this was kind of, we all come with these ingrained beliefs that we've been taught or healthcare has embedded in us, or our family values, all those other stuff. One of the elements that came out was vulnerability of the client, that they recognized, again, oh, this is really huge, and that it's also okay to have to plant those seeds. You don't have to see the solution fixed in front of you to know that something may be happening. That it's really hard to give up the role of expert, that compliance is an option, that healthcare or educational taught beliefs maybe need a little bit of shifting in our practice, lots of new perspectives overall, and that in the judgment case, judgment element came 3 additional themes of our systems oftentimes create non-compliance in our patients, that personal judgment about patient follow-through is a hard one to kind of get rid of, and that we need to recognize some of our own use of judgmental language. So again, some samples on planting seeds. With a positive or affirming position, a health coach can encourage the cultivation of behavior changes in others, planting seeds of change one encounter at a time. That the role of expert, I realized how torn I am between feeling obligated to give advice and provide education versus needing to be more of an active listener. That was repeated a lot. And that the healthcare context, the value is evident when I use these health promotion tools in practice. The problem is that I'm only one person in a big system. Not everyone has this information, and so it's really hard to make that system change. Non-compliance, I'm no longer going to say that my patients are non-compliant. It just may be that they are not ready to make a change yet. As nurses and doctors, we get so caught up in thinking that all we need to do is tell our patient what they need to do, and when they don't, we say it's their fault they're non-compliant. Instead, we need to take it further and find out why. Personal judgment, I will always wonder, why doesn't this person change? What will it take? Why can't they see how this affects them? How can I help them? And many others. My tentative answer to all of this is it just keep practicing and keep trying, ask others for input, and try to keep an open mind. And then, again, for developing accurate understanding, there's the personalizing of the encounter, being fully present, checking for accurate understanding, outcome, that happens when you don't push your client was huge. So personalizing means I have found that open-ended questions are a great way to begin discharge teaching. For example, once a patient has passed the initial post-op period and is beginning to look ahead to discharge, a simple question like, what concerns you the most right now, really opens up where they want to go, and we end up talking about a wide variety of topics. When not pushing, because of the power of the questions to elicit new thoughts and ideas, I found in the client role that I really wanted her to get at her coach and understand my point of view. There was a spirit of camaraderie and support, and I contrast this experience with my visit to the GP a few days ago, where I felt bombarded with his agenda and ended up in no way feeling understood. Okay, so then the last of these world citizenship ones is that, you know, a real belief in that spirit of openness, which is a foundation for MI, that sense of autonomy of choice, and then our role in promoting change by understanding that the patients control their own lives, that they really don't need advice, and that we elicit solutions from our patients, we're going to be more successful, and that we need to go beyond information giving as a whole. So eliciting solutions, there's two on that one. During frequent interactions with older immigrants with chronic illness, I learned a lot about their conditions by simply listening to what they had to say. I used reflection, affirmation, summarizing, and of course, advice giving, as she said with sarcasm. I knew that they had heard my information many times before, but I felt that it was my professional duty to educate them again and again. If I had MI then, I would have tried to elicit solutions from the clients themselves. And the second one, it makes sense to promote health promotion change and health when it comes from within ourselves. It helps create self-awareness, self-esteem, and when the client leaves the interview, they could have a multitude of feelings or thoughts. Hopefully, one of these feelings won't be feeling bad about themselves. So in conclusion, and I apologize again for zipping through all of those things, but that shift in social consciousness, Giddings has a model on that from acquired to expanded social consciousness. And what I'm seeing in this research and what I saw over basically 3 years worth of seeing and continuing student work is that I think MI can be a really nice shift of focus and shifts the students from blaming the clients and RNs, since they were my student population, and instead helps us become more aware as health professionals how to engage with our client better. I have 5 minutes. Oh, your timer must be slow because I could never get below 20 when I practiced. So it's really important to make that shift. And then the other thing that I think MI does is that it's a really good facilitating tool, because once they have that experience as both a client and a coach, they recognize what it feels like as the RN to engage with their client and help them to pull this information out. But also from the client perspective, oh my word, how does this feel? And they really do make this huge shift into, as you saw, some of that social consciousness that they really didn't come with at the first time. And in fact, a lot of students, they'll come into the class initially and say, so what does health promotion have to do with nursing? So you can see that there's some important work to do. So since I have a few minutes, I don't know if you have any questions related on MI or if I can give you more information. I can tell you, go ahead.
Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I'm doing a distance-based education that was based on key informant and focus group interviews with the recipient population and around HIV care. We're using MI as one strategy for delivering HIV care in the resource-limited settings. But I'm wondering if you know of any great MI resources to give to those learners, some of whom have only finished high school. So you've done skill development, but is there a great summary that I could give them that's practical and low literacy burden?
You know what? What I could do, what I would encourage you to do is give me your card. We have a lovely listserv, and I'd like to toss that out because there's a lot of people working in these diverse populations with low literacy, and I might be able to see if there's anybody who's put something out. And I'm more than happy to talk to you about some elements and maybe fine-tune what it is that you're doing. Because there's a couple of different things out there, and we're working on a new project with Afghanistan refugees and trying to teach community health workers and then translating that into a really interesting program so that they can engage with the population rather than the healthcare professionals who they're tuning out. So I think there's some similar elements in what you're trying to work with. So yes, there definitely is. It's just once they have the tools, really it's the practice, and then they develop some of their own pieces. So I'd almost even encourage doing a focus group with them and saying, how do you engage with this? And you know, how do you say these things?
I just unfortunately don't have the opportunity because they're located in Kenya. So I've done focus groups there, but now I'm isolated.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk.
Yeah.
Anyone else? If you're not familiar with MI, it's very strongly evidence-based. There's already over 1,000 articles on it, heavy research, most of it in substance abuse. If you want to go to the website, it's motivationalinterviewing.org, and you can get a list of those references as well as a variety of resources. They had their options. Some students did choose real patients. Not all were comfortable trying it out the first time. So they used family members as well as each other and peer workers. And, you know, that not in this research, but in other research I've presented, where they had some really interesting effects with their family members, such as, you know, my dad and I had the best conversation we've ever had in our lives, and he actually called me up and thanked me afterwards. Yeah, some really powerful, and same thing with the parent to teen. Teen has had that same comment. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.